essentially what emerges in Machlokas Rishonim as to fundamentally, does Matan Amanasa have to work for Kedushin? We know that practically speaking it does. Practically speaking, we're not able to use it. But it's not clear whether that is fundamentally the case, or is it a gzeira that some of the Rishonim say that it's really a gzeira, that when the Gemara compares it to Chalipin, and we discussed whether or not we understand how it has anything to do with Chalipin, so when the Gemara compares it to Chalipin, it could be that that means it looks like Chalipin, so maybe there's a gzeira, you shouldn't do it. But maybe it really does work. And if that's the case, then fundamentally there's no problem with Matan Amanasa Hatzir and Kedusha. But if we say that it doesn't work fundamentally, which is what some of the Rishonim seem to say as well, so then that takes us down a different path and we'll have to try to understand that a little bit. So we are looking at this in two parts. First, we started off talking about, let's try to understand what Matan Amanasa Hatzir is. And maybe that will help us with a framework here. So one question is, what does Matan Amanasa Hatzir essentially involve? And we had asked before we even started just the question of how is this different from lending something? And we know that halakhically it is different in the absolute sense. So how do we define that difference? So we discussed that there is a machlokas harishonim as to basically what happens, that the Rush and a few other Rishonim, like the Ritva and Kedusha and the Rush and Sukkah, understand that what happens is this is a full kinyan in every sense of the word. So essentially, the item belongs to the recipient. And the giver has no stake in it anymore at that time. He just has a side deal. It's more than a side deal because it's conditional. But he has a deal that it's going to be sent back to him, but until such time, he no longer maintains any chelek in it. While Victor Katz, who's also quoted by the Rush in his Tshuvas, understood differently that it was a kinyan lizman. That essentially it's a temporary kinyan, and that eventually it's going to expire. It'll expire at some predetermined time, a predetermined point, and then it reverts to the original owner. And we discussed within that that there are probably two ways to see that. Does that mean that it's a actual kinyan in the fullest sense? Or does that mean that it's only a kinyan teros? That either way, within these two possibilities, it's going to be a temporary kinyan, but during that temporary time, is it fully the recipient's? Or is it only there for the purposes of usage, of benefit, of hishtamshus, but that's not a real kinyan, though you're raising him?
Yeah, the Rush says that if a person does shayla and makes a deal with the lender that is going to use the item that he borrows for kedushin.
If a person does shayla,
yeah, and
the person borrows something?
Yeah, he borrows something, right. And he tells the lender that he's going to use it for kedushin. Mm-hmm. So Rush says that that would work for that being good kedushin.
Let's take a look at that together, exactly what you mean. I'll puff.
Yeah.
So here he talks about this at the beginning, right? So he quotes others on this topic.
Yeah, a little further down, he says, Mishaleni tavat kidei lekadish ba'ota isha.
Yeah. And which part are you looking at?
It's a little bit before the middle of the rush. Begins Amnam Nirali, Imyo Marli, Imyo Marlo.
Yes.
There.
Right, so in having the Kadesh, the Kevin to Hishalah, a diet for the Kadesh Bodhis Yisha. And inside the Gamma Libo, the Gamma Libo, the Gamma Libo, also Lash and Shiol and Kadush, the Kadesh as well. The Adai Tach, most of the other Hatabas. The Law of Lash and Shaela, you have Lash and Matana, the Apophis, the Matana, the Lahatsir. You have the Kadesh, the Yukne, the Yukne, who have been Haisha.
Right? So how is that? Isn't that just matan amanat lahafzir? How is it still sheila?
Because matan amanat lahafzir from the well, first you said it could be matan amanat lahafzir. So that basically, that the question is that becomes that. But the problem is that here we're talking about from the third guy to him. We're talking about how the kaddish gets the ring that he then gives to the isha. So he's not giving it to the Isha, but Tanah and Asa Hatsa.
Oh, actually.
Right now, the Maisi is still going to, he's still going to have to. Now, this is going to affect another Shad we'll talk about in a minute. So hold on to this for a second, because this only works based on a question we'll ask, you know, in probably 1 minute. So essentially, just to back into what we're talking about here, that the question was as follows. So we see that according to the Rush, there is an absolute kinyan to the recipient in the complete sense of the word. And according to other Rishonim, like the Vigna Katz, and like the Sos follows that, that no, it's not an absolute kinyan, it's a temporary kinyan. And in the temporary kinyan, there could either be a full kinyan temporarily or a Kairos kinyan temporarily. So, what effect does that have on our story? First of all, what effect does that have on issues in general? So, what difference does it make if the kinyan is total kinyan, and the question is just, do you have to give it back later? Or if the kinyan is temporary? So, there are a couple of nafkaminas. I should mention, there's a very dear friend of mine, Rabbi David Gottlieb, who's a Rabbi in Gushnow, has a beautiful sefer called the Teres Yaakov, where he has a very nice piece about Matana al-Nas Lachzer, where he phrases it in this particular way. So we'll mention more about what he had to say about it in a minute, but he frames it this way as well, that the question of is the Matana a complete Matana or not affects a number of issues. The first issue is explicit in the Rishonim here, right? The question of, does there need to be a new hakna back to the original owner? So see, if Reuven gives the item to Shimon on Asa Hatzir, and now Shimon is going to give it back to Reuven. So one question is, so does Shimon have to actually make a hakna back to him? Or does it revert back to him automatically because the kinyan is over? So if you believe, like the Rush says, and this is explicitly what he's talking about, and what the Ritva is talking about, that since the kinyan is absolute to Shimon, so therefore Shimon never gives it back, so that Shimon has it in his possession the whole time. Now, you get into some interesting time travel paradoxes here, because if he doesn't give it back, so then you can say retroactively he never had it in the first place, and then what does that do to the whole situation? But to fulfill the condition, at least, to look at it in a straightforward fashion, he's obligated to make a hakna back to the original owner. While others, like the cats, will say there's no need for a kinyan back, because once the time elapses, it goes back automatically. Okay, so far so good. Jonah?
Would that be presupposing that Matana al-Nas lahafzir had a set date and time?
Not necessarily, because you could make it also contingent on events. You could say, let's say, for example, in the context of Ulu Hanesro, you could say, all right, listen, take it to be yotze with it, and once you're yotze with it, or once everyone in the shul is yotze with it, then it goes back to it.
Doesn't the Rush say that that would be a halacha and not
So the Rush has an issue with this, but the other Rishonim don't agree. The Rush's whole conception is that that's not how it works.
Right.
Now the Rush, from that context, brings a Zaraya that that's not how it works. And any unique issues that involve Ruv and Esra, there's some other details which I want to maybe expand on a little bit tomorrow, but just the Raya that he brings from there, is that we know the Gemara says that it's a problem to involve a child in this whole story, because if you give it to a child, he acquires it, and he can't be machne it back to you. A child's not able to be machne. Machne requires a different level of das. So you're going to get stuck, because you can't get it back. Says the Rush, there you see that it doesn't come back automatically. There's a requirement for an extra kinyan there. And because the child can't do the kinyan, that's where we get in trouble. Now, parenthetically, if you don't agree with the Rush, if you, let's say, agree with the Victor Katz, so what do you do with that right? Right? It seems like it's a pretty decent point. What about that Gemara? The Gemara seems to say that there has to be a formal kinyan back. So how would you address that? So you have to assume that maybe the Gemara there is actually not really talking about Matana Amanas Lachs. That's how some of the later Svarim say. That maybe you'll have to assume that what's happening there is that the adult gave his lulav to a child. Maybe it was his own child, and maybe that's why he assumed this way. That he assumes that, look, he's a good boy, he'll give it back to me afterwards. I don't have to make it conditional, he'll do it. So then, if that's the case, the Gemara is saying that's not going to work because the child's not a bar hafi to be machne it back to you. But if you actually do it explicitly in the Tanam Nasahaksir, so that maybe that doesn't require a new kinyan, maybe that's kind of like a, I guess you call it a rubber band kinyan. What's the best imagery for this? Where,
A boomerang.
Yeah, boomerang is not even a, yeah, I guess boomerang should work. One of those things that has elastic and then, you know, you pull it and it's just coming back to you. So, it's basically got a leash on it, I guess, you know. So, he's going to use it and then as soon as he lets go, it's still attached to you.
A yo-yo
sack. Yeah, maybe that'll work. So, maybe the imagery here is a yo-yo kinyan, so it's going to come back. Okay. So, that's one of the major issues that comes up in terms of what is Matana Manas Lahafsir going to involve. No?
Doesn't the Gemara in Sukkah the favor say it is Matana Manas Lahafsir?
Not that sentence necessarily. The Gemara says it's possible to read it in a mixed way. And it's possible to read the Gemara says one thing about Matana Manas Lahafsir, and then also says, by the way, don't give it to a Kohen because then they'll get messed over. Theoretically. But it is a little more of a forced reading, which is why the Rush has his advantage. So now let's address the other question you just brought up. Now this is a question which I think somebody asked last week in a different context. It is a very interesting question from a couple of levels, and it's definitely a pretty fundamental issue here. Let's say I give you a Matana Manas Lahafsir, and you decide you don't want to give me back the item. You want to give me back the value of the item. Does that work? So Jacob said, why not? That doesn't seem the problem. So Jacob, who do you agree with when you say that?
Maybe the Ritva.
But it would be consistent with the Ritva, yeah.
Rush.
Right? And the Rush, right? Because this is Noah's Rush, the Rush he was just talking about a second ago. Right? Because the situation that the Rush was dealing with, in general, the question can come up very simply, right? Because it's a kind of basic possibility that might occur to you here. Let's say you don't want to give back the item, you want to give back the value. Or, let's say you did something to the item that doesn't allow you to give back the item itself. So, all the more, sorry?
Such as consuming it.
Right? Or, such as being Mekadei Shanisha with it. So that's the case the Rush was just talking about, that Noah was asking. Right, that if we're assuming that Matana Amanas Lahafsir doesn't work by Kiddushin, you can't tell her she has to give it back to you. So let's say I get something Matana Amanas Lahafsir from Noah, I get a ring from him, a Tanam Nasa Hatzir. And I then use that ring to be Makari Shanisha. Stop, without any conditions. So that's the case you were just asking about. And that's where the Rosh says it could work. Because first of all, whatever kind of ownership I need to get to do that, so we assume that that's what you have in mind. Whatever the language is, whether you call it a Shayla, you call it a Matana Manas Lachzir, whatever kind of ownership I need to be called the owner of the ring, that you are intending. So now, I have to give it to the Yeshua fully. So okay, I give it to her. So wait a minute, how am I going to fulfill my condition to give it back? So if I said to her, listen, I got to give this back to Noah, so hurry up and give it back to me right after the chuppah, so then, wait a minute, that's going to be Matana Manas Lachzir, like our sugya. So, apparently, the option exists, says the Rush, that no, I don't have to force her to give me back the ring. I can take the value, and I can give the value back and fulfill my Matana Manas Lachzir. So that's the case you were just asking about before, and you see it's totally on this issue. Because, according to the Rush, that works. According to the Bala Itur, the Meiri, and no less than the Shulchan Aruch, that doesn't work. So that may go to the question of, if the item is yours. Okay, so then you have the right to decide, okay, I owe you, but maybe I can pay you money instead. But if the item is not yours in the first place, so then what right do I have to say, I'm going to keep it and give you the money? Israel?
Why don't you just buy the ring then?
Why don't you just buy the ring from the first guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't. So that's an interesting question by itself. There could be a couple of answers to that. Maybe it wasn't the thought out plan to begin with. Or I'm also wondering something else here. I'm wondering something on two levels. Something we actually discussed a little bit in our topic yesterday, Sunday morning. That let's say you would do this. Let's say you make a condition to return something, and instead of returning it, this happens with library patrons all the time, right? So instead of returning it, you just pay for the item. So is that a violation of Los Afla? Because presumably the guy didn't want to sell it to you, which could answer your question, right? Let's say not that this wasn't thought out, it was very thought out. It's nefarious. You have this intention to get this item so that you can keep it and just pay back the value. So I just wonder whether that's called Los Afon. If you're familiar with Sugya of Los Afon, did we discuss it in Sanhedrin as much as we could have? I guess not. But the Bava Kamma. So most of the Rishonim assume. It's a complicated sugya, Los Afmo, it's a big machlokes Rishonim. But a lot of Rishonim assume that Los Afmo means that you don't steal something, that's low signal. But rather you take something and pay for it, but the paying for it was not the desire of the seller. So even though you're paying the value of the item, it's still a violation of Los Afmo. Maybe that's what Los Afmo means. Okay, John was up first.
But there was no framework in that scenario necessarily for something like that to happen.
Well, which scenario? The classic Los Afmo scenario? Or,
exactly, yeah. When you classic Los Afmo, you're kind of either forcing yourself upon the person, and
right.
So there's a Indian being involved for to a certain extent. Obviously,
right. Let's say it means you just pressure the guy like crazy, which
right.
Could be a Los Afmo. It's a big machlokes to show them what exactly
right.
Is involved. So let's assume you just drive the guy nuts until he gives
right.
It to you and you're paying for it.
In our scenario, there's a realization, it seems like there's this fluid understanding that when someone's giving you this matana nas lahachzir, what they're really giving you is value, like let's say a shalik kasa, proper, and they're whatever.
Maybe.
And then what's happening is that he's accepting the likelihood or possibility that you're going to return it to him in a certain way. Meaning, I don't think the Rush sees it as a violation of the top.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe. You could be right. I mean, I'm not sure. I see a couple of possibilities here. So normally, again, just to get this down, so normally, if you buy something from someone against their will, it should be a violation of Los Afmo, as we also mentioned yesterday in the context of the Tlu V'Zavin Sugya. So here, is that what's going on? So you could say, first of all, maybe it is, but it's an Ochanami, it's still Konit. So it still works, it's just a question of whether there is a violation at the same time. Or maybe you could say no. Maybe you could say that, especially according to the Rush, that if the recipient owns it at this time, so how can you tell me there's Lo Sachmod on something that I already have? Even though it's a pretty roundabout, again, plot here, but maybe how can you say that it's Lo Sachmod if I already own it? I have a Chiyuv to pay it back to this guy. So I can pay it back, Shova Kesef Kekesef. Instead of giving back the item itself, I can give back the value. How can you call that Lo Sachmod? I have a Chiyuv Piron, like any other thing. Now the truth is, though, this could come up in all kinds of more straightforward things, right? So if you borrow something, so you don't have the right to say, you know, you've always envied your neighbor's iPod. So you say, can I borrow it for an hour? And then when he comes to get back, you say, surprise, I'm just giving you cash instead. I wanted to buy it. So there, it's clear that since it's She'ela, that you're holding on to it for the original owner. So that, just because it's physically in your possession, that shouldn't really be any different than forcing him to sell it to you when he's holding on to it. So here our question is, which is it? Is it like that, like a borrowing for that purpose? Or should we say, no, you fully acquire it, so once you fully acquire it, so now the only idea that you have to give it back, that can be viewed through a Shava Kesef Kekesef lens, and you should be able to pay money instead. Okay? So far, so good? So these are among the issues that are affected by this question of how do you view the Matana Manas Lahafzir itself. There are a few other issues, like Rabbi Gottlieb discussed this in the Sefer. For example, the question of does the one holding on to it, does the recipient accept achrayas for the item? Does he accept liability if something happens to the item? So here again, the Rush says yes, and other Rishonim disagree. And as Rabbi Gottlieb notes there, that the idea that achrayas, Shalavetchik discusses in the Shiurim, that achrayas is something that correlates to ownership, that if you are, to the extent that you are more of an owner of something, you have more liability for it. So that it makes sense that if you believe that Matana Manas Lahafzir, the recipient, is actually on some level the owner, so that, or maybe really fully the owner, in fact, so then it makes sense that he should have Achrayas that associates with the item. Another slightly less central question is, let's say the guy eventually, the giver, eventually is Mochel on the Tanai. Right, so Noah gives something to Jonah Manas Lahachzir. And then Noah says, you know what, I've just been overcome with generosity. I'm Moichel. You don't have to give it back to me. So now does Jonah need to make a new Kenyan on it? Or do we say that no, it just means it's no longer a Tanai, so he can just take it and live happily ever after? So that probably goes to the question as well. Did he have any ownership of it in between? Or do we say, no, really it was Noah's the whole time. So if Noah's being mochel on the Tanai, that doesn't necessarily constitute a Kenyan on Jonah's part, and therefore Jonah's going to require a new Kenyan in order to acquire. Okay, so far so good? So essentially that seems to suggest that the idea of a matana manas lahachzir could be the question here, right? So we could say, if we have a machlokas, a fundamental machlokas, as to whether or not matana manas lahachzir is effective in the realm of kedushin, maybe that's the whole issue. Maybe the question is it yours or isn't it? That if it belongs to the isha, so then why shouldn't it be good? Okay, there's a condition she has to give it back later. Okay, but that's later. Right now it's hers. Well, if you say that it's never really fully the possession of the recipient, So then you can understand the view of the Rishonim that it's fundamentally not a viable possibility for Kesef Kedusha. So far, so good? That makes sense? Any questions? Okay, so that might work if we want to look at it through the lens of what does Matana Manas the Hachzir involve and how does that match. But of course, there's another angle to consider, one that's more fundamental to our whole Zman so far. What is that? Could ask the question that's really been in the background of the whole year. What does Kesef Kedushin require? What does the Kenyan Kesef require? So how would you phrase that question if you want to use that to investigate here? How would you phrase, what's the central issue? If you want to know, okay, Matana Manas HaHachzir is whatever it is, but the issue lies somehow in understanding Kenyan Kesef Kedushin. Noah, how would you phrase the question?
Can you do Kenyan Kesef with something that's not yours?
Well, not whose. Who's yours?
That's not the person who's trying to be true.
But that's not our case. That's the Russia's case that you were mentioning before.
Right.
Right? But our case in the Gemara is the one who's trying to be true does fully own it. He wants to tell the betrothee that she has to give it back to him. Right. So the question of that works. What does that hinge on? Jacob Sachs, take it away. Enlighten us. Show us the light. Show us the path. Make us understand what's going on. Show us the truth.
Does the value of the Kesef have to be long term, or if it's just for a short amount of time, is that enough to be a valid kingdom for Kedushin?
Okay, so that certainly seems like one relevant question, right? And that's an issue which the Rishonim seem to say explicitly. The Rishonim, like the Ran and the Ramban, maybe the Rambam, right, that the soul here is that it doesn't last. But let's take the question to another level, though. Okay, so that statement we have already in the Rishonim. So if you want to, and that's very well put, so if you want to take that, then let's shift the question over. All right, because this is not a sentence that's 100% unassailable. Maybe there's a wrong premise here. But let's work off this premise for a second that, oh, so these Rishonim who say it's fundamentally no good, they say that there has to be a Hanah that lasts, while other Rishonim who are okay with it fundamentally and say it's only a Gzeira, they don't have this idea that it has to last. So what's that Machlokas about? And let's just shift the question over. Jedidiah, Zebediah, take it away.
Is the question whether King Kesef is symbolic or whether it's something that's actually like not a shiva but something along those lines?
Okay, I think it's related to that. Yeah, I think it's certainly going to be affected by that question. But even if we want to throw that question, and again, a very, very correct point, but we could still have an umbrella question which might include that question, it might include what Jacob said, it might still go to a more fundamental place. Jonah.
What kind of either vilest relationship the Mikdash needs with the Kesef when doing Kesef Kedushin?
Well, that goes back to said to Noah. It's not what, is it a question the Mikdash has to have or the question the Mikdash has to have?
Right.
Right, what relationship does she have to have?
Right.
Which might be already included in our in Jacob's formulation. Right? So I think everything you guys are saying is very, very true, very, very much a center of this issue. But you can ask a question which kind of is an umbrella for all those questions. It's going to include everything you guys just said. And basically say it like this. Again, if you look in the Ateres Yaakov, this is how he portrays it. That should we say that our ikker interest in a Kenyan Kesef is about the husband giving something? Or is it about the kala getting something? Now, in essence, that could include all of the questions you guys just mentioned. Right? Because Jacob says, does it have to be a hanah that lasts? Again, an issue that the Rishonim are clearly worried about. Right? So does it have to have a it have to be hana that lasts? So if you say yes, it means you're focusing on what the kala gets. That the kala has to get benefit. And if the husband is giving but she's not getting, no good. While if you're not worried about that, right, you don't believe in this whole idea of hana, hanisheres. So then you're saying it's enough that the husband gives. We don't care whether or not she gets it in a lasting way. Right, so you see, Jacob, how your question fits into this question?
I don't really see the chiluk so much between him giving and her receiving.
Well, because we just showed how you could have one without the other. Right, that if he's doing this maisa nesina, but it's not staying with her.
Is it really not staying with you?
Presumably, right, because yeah, really, I'm good that he's giving it. Right, but she is going to have to give it back an hour later.
It comes back to like the shame matzah. I mean, it's not if she's not getting, it really calls him giving.
I would think yes. The question whether it's called the matana is a little bit possible to separate out. But he's doing the giving. And our only difference here is that she's not actually doing the keeping. So the difference seems to be from her perspective. So that's what half the Rishonim say, but that's no good. It has to be nishar, it has to last. So that's a description of what do we care about in terms of this give and take. The give or the take. And if she's not taking in a full sense, maybe there's something fundamentally wrong. Jacob.
I just feel like the giving and taking is not really so different. Meaning, if I'm giving it, if the man is giving it to the woman for 3 hours, and then it's not called her receiving because in 3 hours it goes back to him, then is it really called him giving if it's coming right back to him in 3 hours?
Okay, so to address that, let's show how we could look at the other angle. Right, so we said before that Jed's question also fits into this broader question, right? But you need an extra step to explain how. So what was Jed's question? So Jed, very faithfully, draws on the issue that has cropped up so many times throughout the year, right? Taz and the smile and that whole cover that just can't stay out of the room. Every time you try to talk about a different sugya, they pop their heads in and say, wait a minute, don't forget about us. Right? So what's the issue there? That according to the Sma, and we have the Meluim even more, right, the idea of a Kesef Kedushin is that you're actually paying for something. Or I should say, really, according to the Sma, the idea of a Kinyan Kesef in general is that you're actually paying for something. And the Avni Miluim said more that that's actually what's going on even in Kiddush. While, according to the Taz, and those who agree with him, no, it's symbolic. So, if you believe you're actually paying some value to somebody, then the discussion of Matan al-Manasa Haftu becomes very difficult. How could you say that you're actually benefiting someone when they're not actually getting anything? They're not going to keep it. It only seems to make sense if you say that it is a symbolic kinyan. And if it's a symbolic kinyan, so then there's what to talk about to say that, listen, you don't get to keep it because I'm giving it to you as a symbol. And in fact, the Nesiv HaSamishpat and the Kovet Shurim, the Kochanan, they say that this seems to be a proof that the Taz is right. This seems to be, the Sugya seems to be a proof, and we've seen many so far, that we're talking about a symbolic kinyan. Because if you weren't talking about a symbolic kinyan, then how can we even consider Matan Manasa Hachzir? Matan Manasa Hachzir is kind of a ridiculous idea if we're talking about something actually getting paid. So if Matan Manasa Hachzir is even a discussion, that shows you it has to be symbolic. Okay? Which is, again, the side that we've preferred the whole year so far. So that, I think, Jacob, answers your question a little bit, right? How could you have any substance or an idea of somebody giving without there really being receiving? Well, we do have that with symbolic transactions. All right, maybe the chalipin that we do nowadays with Kenyan Suder also represents that. I can give you the handkerchief and you give it back to me because this is all symbolic in the first place. So too, maybe if that's what the idea is, all right, then yes, we could have an asina from the husband, but you don't necessarily have to have a acceptance from the kala. Or you don't have to have a full, lasting acceptance on the part of the kala. So basically, just so we're clear what we've done here, right? So the questions that you guys suggested, you see how they all fit in this rubric, right? Your question of, is it symbolic or a payment? And your question of, is it actually lasting and does it need to last? Right? All of that could all be under the umbrella heading of, are we interested in the husband giving, or are we interested in the kala receiving? No.
Are there other nafkamino?
No other nafkamino.
Okay, I'm sorry, that's a problem.
Yes?
There are other nafkamino for Rabbi Gavin's tefillah.
Yeah, this one, the particular one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so for example, he also mentions there's a machlokas, this comes up in Gittin, this machlokas by Kedushin. What if somebody says to, you know, keep us for our list of at least romantic weddings, somebody already sets the tone for just how involved he's going to be in the marriage and who's going to do all the heavy lifting. Somebody says, okay, I'm leaving your ring on the counter, pick it up. Flee Kiddushayich, Me'al Gabe, Me'akarka, Me'al Gabe, somewhere else. If you say that here's how it's going to work, you pick up the ring from off the floor. And again, it's not really a great tone to set for your marriage, but let's say that's how you want to do it. So that's the machlokas, whether that works or not. The Avni Miluim in Sama Lamed quotes the Ma'aril that does not work, and the Avni Miluim himself thinks that it does work, which maybe L'shitaso is, will be. But the question is she getting something? That's what we're concerned about. So as long as she picks up the ring, that's enough. Or should we say that, this is really high in the list of non-romantic processes, I really would not recommend this if you want to send a good message. Or if we say that it's about his nesina, so then maybe that doesn't count, his nesina, he's not actually doing anything. Okay? Yes, sir.
With the Samantas, so fitting that into the whole concept of whether it's his giving or her receiving, so if we're saying like that it has to be like the Taz, that it's symbolic, so that means that it has to be, that the emphasis is on his giving and not on her receiving?
If you're saying the Taz, well then at least, I don't know if you have to say it, but it's viable. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it.
Can you still say that it is her receiving, yeah, that's symbolic?
Yes, you could. So that's why I would phrase it carefully. I wouldn't necessarily say you have to say it. I for sure actually wouldn't say you have to say it. But it's viable. Right? That if it's about paying somebody something, it's not viable to even talk about matana menasa hafsa. The whole concept doesn't make sense. Right? Like we said last week, so you'll pay your electricity bill with the money and then ask for it back, and pay your grocery bill and ask for it back, and pay your rent. There's no such thing. Right, but how can we even talk about this? How does it even enter the conversation? It enters the conversation because maybe if it's symbolic, then it's enough for him to be given. Now, yes, your point is, well, still, maybe the symbolism requires her accepting. So yeah, maybe it does. I don't know if you have to say one way or the other. But it's conceivable that it's just about his giving if it's symbolic. If it's about payment, it's not even conceivable. Okay, so let's just get one or two other points out. So another issue that connects to this is also an issue which is basically explicitly addressed in the Rishonim that we've seen already, but let's just put it in the framework here. So let's say somebody chooses to use a matana menasa hatzir and says, I want to be mekadesh you on the handah that you get with your temporary possession of this item. So you give this beautiful ring, and you say that wearing it for the night of the wedding is enough of a value, it's worth at least a shem pruta, so you are mekadesh her explicitly on that handah. So here we saw that some of the Rishonim explicitly addressed that, right? And according to some of the Rishonim, they're very clear that that would work. So that also really seems to hang on the whole question. Well, what is the issue? It is the issue that she needs to actually get something. So then, okay, maybe we could say that this qualifies as something. And if that's how you phrase it, okay, fine, that's viable. But if the issue is that we never really had a fundamental problem with the Kamar Asahas. Him giving and her not getting wasn't really such a problem. And therefore, the issue is Gzeirah Midrabanan. So the Gzeirah Midrabanan is about how this whole thing looks. And therefore, it doesn't make sense to say that you're going to save the day by some very subtle phrasing that's not going to change essentially what this looks like. So let's say, for example, the Tosfos and others who say it's Gzeirah, it doesn't necessarily allow for one to say, well, what if I phrase it differently and say I'm doing it on the hanav, the kesef, that you get temporarily. Now, the Rambam, as we mentioned, the Ran and others think the Rambam is in their camp. That the Rambam talks about a hanav that lasts by her, and therefore they assume that that's basically what the Ramban and others say, and if you phrase it that I'm using the hanav that you get from your temporary possession, that should be effective. However, it's not really so clear that the Rambam actually believes that. Rambam doesn't state that like the other Rishonim do. And a number of Achronim take it as a given that the Rambam doesn't allow for that, because the Rambam has it across the board. Now, Matana Manas Nahaksir just doesn't work, regardless of how you declare your intent. So some of the Achronim suggest that, I mean, this is also something you can see in the Teres Yaakov, that the idea of a Kinyan Kesef, according to the Rambam, is that Kesef, by its very nature, has to be something you can benefit from. Has to be a Kesef Shal Hana. And if the Kesef doesn't leave you with anything, then that's simply not called Kesef. And that's what our Sugi is really getting at. And that the hanah has to come from the kesef itself. So essentially, if you're saying, okay, I get to wear the ring for the night, that counts for something, that's not really hanah from the kesef. The hanah from the kesef means you get to keep the kesef. So a kesef that doesn't leave you with any lasting hanah, that's not called kesef, and perhaps that's the nature of the Rambam's issue. No?
This would defer with the Rush, who thinks that you can use that that temporarily using the object would be good for the Kedusha.
The Rush you're talking about again. We're mixing the case again.
Yeah.
Right. So the case the Rush is talking about is the husband has it temporarily, so he's giving it to the wife permanently. I know it's a little confusing, but that's where the issues keep getting mixed. All right, question, Jonah?
Yeah, where would we plug in the Rambam if we had to use the Satiris Yaakov?
I think you'd plug him in still with the other chevra over there with the Rambam and the Ran, that it's about her not getting something. But the question is there an alternative route to deal with it? So according to them, and they again think he's in their camp, or the Ran thinks he's in their camp, right? But assuming that, you know, that that's not the case, but then the difference would be that they say, okay, there's different ways to get this kesef. That if you say the hana of the temporary usage of the kesef, that, okay, that could have worked. But the Rambam, assuming that he doesn't think that, maybe he says this kesef is not called real kesef if you're not getting any lasting hana from it. So therefore, you simply don't have the Kenyan kesef. It's an interesting formulation. Okay, so again, just to chazer our agenda here, then I'm going to chazer what we just did in a minute. After that, we will daven. And then tomorrow, which is a shorter slot, so you have still some armakomas to look at, they'll maybe give you a little bit more. We'll try to just do the appendix, basically, the Tana Manasa Hachzir, by some other things, most prominently probably the Lulav and Esrog, again, maybe Pidgin and Ben. And then after that, get into Arvus. Okay, so what did we talk about today? So we talked about looking at this question from two angles. One angle is the issue about what Matana Manas Lahafzir is? And then we looked at the question of whether the recipient has to make a kinyan back to the original owner. We talked about what if the recipient, this is pretty much the specifically, especially crucial question, what if the recipient doesn't want to give back the item, wants to give back the value of the item? You asked this question last week, right? Somebody asked this question last week. That what if you want to give, all right, could have asked the question last week.
Yeah.
Right, you asked the value of the question. So what if the recipient wants to give back the value, not the item itself, and that whole question of the rush that we keep coming back to. And we took a little bit of a side investigation about would there be a little sachmor in that case, and talked a little bit about the implications of that. The question of whether the recipient accepts sachrayas for the item, and if the owner decides, the original owner decides, it's going to be mochel the tanai, so is there a need for a new kinyan on the recipient, or does the original kinyan work? And then we talked about the question of looking at it from the angle of what does kesef kedushin require, and we saw one umbrella question to ask is, are we looking at the man doing the giving or the woman doing the receiving, which has a number of related questions. The question of, is there a requirement of hana that lasts, as some of the Rishonim explicitly identify here, or is there not? The question of, is it a piron or a symbolic kinyan? In fact, some of the Acharonim saying that this whole sugya even existing is a raya that is symbolic rather than an actual piron. And the question of the non-romantic wedding of pick the ring up from off the floor, does that work or not? Machlokes Mariel Niavim Miluim, how that ties into this. And the question of what if you do choose to use the hana of the Hishtamshus in a temporary way, does that work? Some of the Rishonim we saw explicitly said yes. The Rambam is a little bit of an open question, and that could depend on whether it's a fundamental issue which you could fix by using this different approach, or is it a gzeira, in which case it probably is not going to change for this type of a circumstance. The Rambam may or may not agree with that. The possibility Rambam didn't agree with that, so we discussed how some of the Acharonim understood that maybe the definition of Kenyan Kesef is that it has to actually be a Kesef of Hana, and otherwise that's not going to, it's not going to count. All right, so we will stop here. Who wants to daven mincha for us? I think it's Jacob. Looks like you want to, you're very mincha way, badge. All right. Ashri Yashir B'Tzach, I will look at the Lord.